Welcome back to the Pesky Report presented by Beyond the Monster. I'm Jordan Landry, joined by Brian. Brian, how you doing today?
Great, Jordan. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm going to try and push through. I feel like Kenley Jansen. I hurt my back today. Ironically, watching Kenley Jansen pitch, you know, all the shaking and like ducking and cover wrenched my back, and also screaming when he eventually struck out Mike Trout. But anyway, this is our MLB show. We're going to start this like we did last time. We're going to recap the Red Sox weekend series with the Angels. There'll probably be a little bit of overlap talking about the Blue Jays, the Orioles series, but mostly Angels. And then we're going to move on to MLB centric dialogue. But so Red Sox narrowly escaped getting out of here with some history, being on the wrong side of history with their worst start in franchise history at home. They ended up snatching yesterday's game, and then ended up winning the series today. But we'll go probably game by game. First off, but any initial takeaways from this past series? I mean, I guess even maybe the last five or so games, for you, Brian.
I mean, I think Baltimore was kind of like the measuring stick. You're like, okay, they've done pretty well. Well, they were 7-3 before the series started, and you're like, all right, here we go. And I think the frustrating thing for me, I don't know how you felt, Jordan, you felt like a lot of those games were winnable, and then something happened. And every day was like, they can't possibly keep playing Hamilton and shortstop. They can't possibly, oh, wait, Devers is out again and again and again. And it's like, all right, well, Durant can play center, and Rafael is going to play shortstop, and when are we going to do this? And it wasn't me. It wasn't just my friends. It was national media. It was all the local guys just ripping Sean McAdam, everybody that I follow. They can't possibly do this. It's embarrassment. It's minor league baseball. It's not major league baseball. What are they doing out there? But, I mean, they're sticking with it, I guess, apparently. And then we got through the Baltimore series, and then we went to the Angels series, and Hamilton's making some decent plays. You know, there's still a lot of issues there, but it's better. But you're going to beat the average teams, the scrub teams. You come in and play like a real team like Baltimore, and the warts start to show. And, you know, when you start leaving runners on base, not scoring runs, a team like Baltimore is going to walk all over you. So it was nice to see them play a little better, but you also know they're also playing the Angels. So,
yeah, I'm with you there, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Like, if there's one thing you can control game to game, it is how you play defensively. Yep. It's, I mean, there's always going to be a bad hop. Errors do happen. Like, that stuff, it's part of the game, and the only way you're ever going to avoid ever making an error again is by retiring, because it's going to happen. It's baseball. People fail. It's a game of failure. But the problem is, like you said, you know, what really bothered me, and I'll talk mostly about the Angels series here when I talk about the defense, but that first game of the series was over before it even started, because I know how it gave up a leadoff single to Anthony Rendon, but then you had a double play ball. Hamilton biffs the throw to second base. You got first and second. Then I think there was another single, and then there was a double play ball that would have allowed a run to score, but you get two outs out of it, and Houck maybe can escape 1-0. Instead, Reyes bobbles the ball, and you only get one out of it. And then they ended up scoring, I believe, 4 runs in the inning instead of 1 or maybe 2. Yeah. And it's over before the game even starts, before you even come up to bat. And I know that they were facing Reed Detmers, who is a bit of a wild card pitcher. He's, you know, razor sharp, or he's horrible. This year, he looks a bit more razor sharp than horrible. But I didn't think Reed Detmers looked that good very early in the game. Like, but the thing is, you suck the life out of your team by playing such poor defense in the first inning of the game that you almost feel like you've already lost. It's like, oh, well, if we get 2 or 3 runs here, we'll just find a way to give them 3 or 4 again. And thankfully, to their credit, the last 2 days, they kind of buttoned up their defense. And especially today, I thought they were awesome defensively. There was one play in the 9th inning that a lot of people, so I was at the game today, a lot of people in my section were like, actually, there's 2 plays. I'll talk about the first one that involved David Hamilton, because he's kind of the guy that's wearing a bunch of this shit right now. But ground ball. So it was 1st and 3rd, nobody out. And I believe it was the 2nd inning. Maybe it was the 3rd. Ground ball up the middle. Hamilton fields it behind the second base bag. Just goes, tags second base. Looked like he had no interest in throwing the ball to first for a potential double play. The run scored from 3rd, but instead it was 1 out and a guy at first base. Where I like that play, make sure you get that guy at second base for starters. Because if you somehow, we know with David Hamilton, sometimes he likes to miss second base. We saw that in the Orioles. Make sure you get that guy at second. And then where I liked the decision to not throw it, maybe he could have gotten him. But if he hurries the throw and he skips it and he throws into the dugout, then that guy's at second, and you may as well have just thrown the damn ball to first. So that showed a little bit of growth for me. And then the second play, bases loaded in the ninth inning because Kenley Jansen decides he hates everybody involved with Boston. Bases loaded, Anthony Rendon comes up. By the way, I'm losing my mind at the thought of Anthony Rendon, the man who just loves baseball, being the reason the Angels, you know, end up walking out of here with a series victory. Hits a deep fly ball to center. Duran makes the catch, throws it right through the middle of the field, just right over second base. Nobody's there to tag out Zach Neto, who's tagging from first base. I loved that throw and the fact that nobody was there, because Casas was not covering second or not covering first base because he was there to feel the cut home. Okay. David Hamilton was in left field or on the edge of the grass to cut a throw to third. And Sadon Rafaela went back to first base to cover a potential back pick if, you know, Neto doesn't commit and he goes back to first base. And you can cut and throw. Sure. Duran's throw to second base was fantastic because he may have heaved that ball to third up the line. But it was in a spot where Casas can just kind of move and go get it wherever the ball ended up going. And it, while it got rid of the double play possibility, it was a high IQ throw. And the fact that everybody was in the position they were supposed to be in, as opposed to like somebody trying to be a hero. I don't want to name names because I don't know who would have been the guy. Probably David Hamilton. It to me, it showed a little bit of like it's starting to click. And I was talking about this with Derek, who's on our minor league show, while we were walking back to the car after. The game is so fast for these young guys. And like we're in the Boston market. We're not patient at all. And I'm guilty of this too. Like I like to preach patience, but I'm the biggest fucking hypocrite because I will make sure that I am not patient whenever somebody screws up. But somebody like David Hamilton, probably not defensively ready for the major leagues. That's not a hot take, but the game is going to be fast for him. So it's going to speed up, especially when it's late and close. So the fact that he was able to play a clean game today and a game that ended up late and close shows that there maybe it's starting to slow down for him. Lou Maloney brought it up on the broadcast last night. These guys are young. They're inexperienced. Guys like Rafael are experiencing the same thing at the plate. The game is fast for them right now. Once it starts to slow down, you'll start to see these little signs that they're just starting to get it. I don't think David Hamilton's a shortstop. I think they would be much better off with him at second and Rafael at short and just play Duran with Abreu and O'Neill, wherever you want to put them in the outfield. But I do think it's starting to click a little bit for Hamilton. I don't think he's ever going to be a great shortstop. I don't think he's ever going to be a great infielder, but it's starting to click where those, like your brain has to be locked in to make this play. And that is what I care about more. Like there's going to be errors, but like missing second base is inexcusable, but like like your brain working, That I'm okay with right now, especially early in the season.
Okay, but as a Pools goal, do you like, oh wow, they're getting better, and then watch, then you know they win a couple games and they fuck up a bunch of plays, and then we're talking about like, is Rafaela going to play shortstop or are they sold on center field? They're like, hey, screw it, fuck you guys, we don't care how bad Hamilton is. We'll get some scrub. We'll find Iglesias. We'll pull him up out of where the hell he's sleeping right now. We'll throw somebody to short, but Rafaela's going to play center field. We don't care. I mean, what are they going to do?
Well, they seem adamant about not playing Sadon at short because they, again, brought him in to play second when they pinch hit Abreu for Bobby Dalbec, who, by the way, should not go unnoticed, has an on-base percentage now. He walked. He reached base. He has an on-base percentage and an OPS above zero. Like, it feels douchey to take a shot at him. But it's gotten past the point of like, I don't think he's a major leaguer. So I detest the fact he's in the lineup to this man needs to go somewhere else because I feel horrible for him. And this market is not going to help. He can feel the pressure. But yeah, he walked today, so good for him. He did not get a hit though, sadly. I thought I was going to witness his first hit in 100 years. But yeah, they're adamant about not playing Sadon at short. I don't know why I would do it, but you know, Cora's gaslighting us into thinking David Hamilton's a good shortstop. He's saying it every day.
I understand Hamilton, like the fantasy, because he's always fast and he's speed and Duran and he can run. Yeah. Didn't he have like 70 stolen bases and double A or something crazy, some bizarre side? Okay. But realistically speaking, is there nobody else in Worcester, some journeyman who's going to play better? Like, is Sogar, who else is shortstop in the system that we can just plug there? We don't care if they hit, and then you don't have to worry about your most important position defensively on the field fucking up every fucking night.
It was Romy Gonzalez, and then
he hurt himself. Well, right, yeah, of course.
Because that's a cursed position. Right now it's probably Sogard, but I still think at that point you call him up, he's playing second, and then put either Rafaela at short or whatever. They're not going to do that, but that's probably the next guy up would be Sogard. Yeah. But in theory, I think barring an injury, they'll probably just ride it out. Hope guys just magically get better as we go on. I mean,
yeah.
Grissom will be slated to return. I think he has to be back by the beginning of May, or he has to go on the 60-day IL. Can they survive two more weeks with David Hamilton at shortstop? Probably.
But Grissom isn't going to play second base shortstop when he gets here. He's going to be, there's a reason we got him for sale, because he didn't pass the test as a shortstop with the Braves. So he's not going to do it here unless they think, oh, well, you know, we had Bailey and he makes the pitchers better, so we have fielding guys who can make guys. No. He's going to play second base. Yeah. But I like kind of, you alluded to before, you were talking before about that there might be a waiver guy they can get. Maybe, you know, somebody who gets cut. I think that would probably be their best bet defensively. Cause I mean, I hate to say it. Like, I know people that have interacted with Hamilton and the minors and some of these other guys, they're nice guys. They're not douches. They're really good people. But if you can't do your job, I don't care how nice you are. It's like, you know, not that I spend all kinds of money for season tickets, but it costs, you know, it costs a few dollars, and you deserve a certain type of product. And you want to talk about Montgomery and the pitching in the offseason, that's a whole nother story. But at least give a shit about shortstop. It's the most important position in center field. You got a guy who can play probably gold glove caliber, you know, shortstop in center field right now. Duran, like, I think it was you was talking about, I forget who somebody was saying. Duran, if he's in center field and Rafael at shortstop, is superior than any of these guys who are going to play, you know, shortstop now in Rafael in center field. They don't want to do that. So, I mean, outside of a waiver claim, it's going to be painful to watch.
Yeah, and just hopefully, so where this is a thing that I also mentioned on my walk back to the car, we see it with Devers, like on these difficult plays, these guys make them like it's nothing. It's crazy. Like their natural talent and ability just takes over because they don't have to think about it. I can live with an error here or there from David Hamilton as he learns the big league game and it slows down on him. It's just funny when like when Devers is back tomorrow, most likely that's kind of the thing. He'll be back tomorrow on Patriots Day, at least shooting for it. If not, he'll probably be back Tuesday. But with an infield of Devers, David Hamilton, Valdez / Pablo Reyes, and Tristan Casas, your infield defense is abysmal, and it's full of guys who are very gifted athletes. Like even Devers, I know he's a big dude, so people think he's like awkward and whatever, but like whenever there's a difficult play, Rafi makes it for the most part. I mean, obviously nobody makes every difficult play. You've not even Nolan Arenado or Key Brian Hayes, but it's like, you can live with physical mistakes on routine plays. Sometimes with guys like young guys like David Hamilton, the frustrating thing is when it's like Devers, he's in year 8 and he still can't field. He still can't make routine plays, but you want a need to do to throw the ball in a bullseye on a bunt. Devers is your guy. That's the one guy I probably trust more than anybody, but Story in the organization.
Well, the frustrating thing, Jordan, too, about with Devers being out, it amplifies the infield defense. So, you know, it's like, okay, your infield defense sucks. And you got maybe 4 or 5 hitters that should be okay, maybe, if you include Abreu getting a couple hits and, you know, Yoshida doing something. But then you look at the bottom of the lineup, or like I think today I watched the actual game on TV for maybe an inning or two. And, oh, is a great time to score some runs, and Dahlbeck's up. And you're just like, it has that feeling of, let's see, it wasn't last year. Maybe it was 2022, I want to say. Yeah, where it was like, okay, oh, we're all excited. And then the bottom of the lineup was just garbage. So you're like, if you don't score a run in the first four or five hitters, like if a guy gets hit in the foot and then like another guy like reaches on an error, that's like the best case scenario, you know? It's just awful. Without Devers, I mean, with the defense that bad, you need Devers in the lineup just from an offensive standpoint. Because if you're not scoring runs, then just that's it.
Yeah, and another thing about amplifying the defense, when guys like Devers are out and like Tyler O'Neill didn't play yesterday, he ended up coming back in the lineup today and homering because that's what he does. The defense, like you notice things like that more. Like when Sadon Rafaela, he's got like a 520 OPS right now. Like he is fighting it offensively. Mm-hmm. If he makes an error, everyone is going to rag on him because he's the defensive guy. That's why he's here. That's why you can deal with his bad offense. But the problem is when you got like him and David Hamilton hitting back to back in the lineup or like within three spots of each other, that's two borderline automatic outs right now. And when your defense is bad and your lineup isn't hitting and you have those two guys in the lineup, every mistake they make gets magnified. So like this is when the Red Sox had Jackie Bradley Jr. like before 2020, because that team was just an absolute disaster. Like they had JD Martinez, Mookie Betts, Devers, Bogarts, David Ortiz as far back as 2016. I don't know if I mentioned Benintendi, but that was when he was good. Benintendi. So you had guys in the lineup that you had just those guys have to hit. And if they're not hitting, they're going to get the shit for not hitting. So Jackie Bradley could survive being the nine hitter in that lineup with a 450 OPS through July. And then the random 6 week stretch that magically made him almost like average for the season. But
yeah, then he would have that month where he's gone. Yeah.
Yeah. You'd have that month where he looked like Ken Griffey Jr. But you could live with bad offense out of those young guys as long as the rest of the lineup is hitting. But when like O'Neill's not in the lineup and Devers isn't in the lineup and like you've Casas and Yoshida hit as like the only two guys and Duran, the only three guys in the lineup that you're like, they can hit. I mean, and even still people still think the jury's still out on Yoshida. I believe he's still a great hitter, but that's just me. We can talk about this more in May. But you know, like a guy like Rafaela or Hamilton, every mistake they make is going to get magnified when the team is not going to be able to score a lot of runs because Devers and O'Neill aren't in the lineup.
But look how screwed they would be, Jordan, without O'Neill right now. Imagine if O'Neill wasn't here and you had some league average whoever from, you know, Worcester.
This Verdugo or Verdugo.
Yeah. You know? So.
Yeah. They'd be in trouble. Although April is usually when Verdugo is – that's his Ken Griffey Jr. month. And then he kind of tapers off. But yeah, I mean, ultimately they're 9-7 their first 16 games of the season. And like, that's about where they're probably going to be all year. Like a little bit above, a little bit below 500 at 500. Mm-hmm. Like that's, they're probably not going to be like people who think they're going to win 65 games are out of their minds. And if you are watching this and want to tell me why I'm wrong, feel free. The comments, you can drop them in there. We'll throw them up, some of them up on the screen, interact with them. And people who think they're going to win 90 plus games, probably just as wrong as the people who think they're going to win 65. They'll probably finish somewhere between 78 to 84 wins. That's just the roster they have. Unless for some reason, like, Vaughn Grissom comes back in early May and he is like the second coming of Nomar, which is very fitting because he's wearing number 5, which also pisses off a lot of people, which is weird because Zue Lin wore number 5 and nobody cared, but people care that Vaughn Grissom is. But it is what it is. They end up salvaging a series win, can live with it.
Well, what number is on the Leandro jersey? Are you 21 or who? What number are you?
On my jersey?
Who's that guy? Yeah. Do you have the Red Sox jersey with your name on the back and like, you know, number 9?
No, my jersey, funnily enough, the day that I threw out the first pitch, they actually gave me a custom jersey with 55 on the back, which I thought was crazy. That's like, that was my number growing up. The fact they gave me a jersey with 55 is hilarious to me. They were like, yeah, sure, we can give you exactly what you want. I'm like, I feel like a player. I'm like, hell yeah, I got to pick my jersey number. That's sick. I do have a Woo Sox jersey that is number 23.
Okay, so in the minors, you were 23 and you worked. Okay, I get it.
Yeah. Yeah, I wore 23, and then I decided to go more towards the prospect number when I got called up, as opposed to the prospect number coming up. But now my jersey of choice right now is the Garrett Richards jersey. I've worn it to both games I've been to. I'm amazed nobody's given me shit for it. It's so funny. Like, I got it in 2021, so, like, he was a god for about 6 weeks before the spider tag ban. No, I bought the jersey after he started sucking, and everybody wanted him, like, dead. Like, everybody on Twitter was like calling for him to go to prison for being so bad at his job, and I was like, screw it, somebody's gotta like the guy still. So I decided it'd be me, so I bought his jersey, and I still have it. I also have a Renfro jersey, but I can't find it, so I'm just riding out the Garrett Richards jersey until I die.
How many youth jerseys of players that haven't played there in 5 or 10 years do you see girls wearing today? Women drinking beverages. You know, they still have like the Xander Bogaerts jersey on, or even older.
Well, I mean, most of the time it's the former player that I see the most, I feel like, is Benintendi. Like, everybody's got a Benintendi jersey, and that is unisex. Like, that's not just a female fan thing. Like, a lot of people still rock Benintendi jerseys. I feel like if I weren't wearing a Garrett Richards jersey, I'd be in a better position to shit on people wearing Benintendi merch. I don't want to completely rag on the guy. I mean, he did win a World Series here. That catch in the ALCS was obviously as pivotal a catch as you'll ever see. You know, he misses that
Kimbrel's
ball.
Saved
Kimbrel's ass, yeah, for sure, which is crazy. Yeah. Another thing. So, okay, I know that we're talking about the series and, like, now kind of just going off on a tangent about whatever.
Yep.
I was shocked that this was Kimbrel's first trip back to Fenway since 2018.
Yeah, that was weird. I was at that game where he got, I mean, they did a little, they played Stranglehold, and I'm like, oh, wow, they're playing that song again. Who's coming out? And then I'm like, oh, that's why they're doing that, because Kimbrel's here. And, like, his picture on the scoreboard, he must have had, like, his hair braid. It was really bizarre. It looked really funky, whatever. And then they get the bullpen really quick, and he's just kind of, the day after, though, that catch from Benintendi, I went apple picking in, I think it was Natick or wherever it was. He was there with his family, Lookout Farm in Natick. And I remember seeing him. Yeah. And I didn't want to bother him because I'm like, yeah, you almost blew it. Yeah. And my wife was like, isn't that so and so? I'm like, don't say it. Just leave the guy alone. It was him, his wife, his must have been his mother in law and his kid. And he walks by me. My daughter has red hair. He goes, oh, you have the same hair as me, you know, because of red hair. And he just kind of is like smiling. He's a really short guy. He's not that tall. And then his wife started talking to my wife and blah, blah, blah. It was pretty cool. But I'm kind of looking at him. I'm kind of like, so how are things going? He's like, thank God Benintendi caught that fucking ball. He's like, he's like, because I have no idea where the ball's going right now. He's like, you know, and he goes, as a closer, you have it and then you just lose it. He goes, I wish I knew what it was. He's like, but sometimes he's like, I feel like I can do whatever I want. And other times it just goes. And the problem is the door opens every day and you got to do your job. And he's like, thank God he caught that ball. And I just remember like, yeah, that's great. And he walks away and I'm like, oh my God, like if he's got like no confidence, oh my God, we're so screwed in the playoffs. But super nice guy, super nice guy.
Yeah. So. It's crazy though, to think it's been 6 years since he was a Red Sox. And like, that was his first trip back. I know 2019, he didn't sign till after the draft and he signed with the Cubs and didn't come up till like August. And then, but like he did pit stops with the White Sox and then the Phillies. And like, there's gotta be another team in there. I feel like I'm missing somebody between the, what, did he go straight from the White Sox to the Phillies? I feel like that he had,
I know he bounced around a lot.
So he was, oh yeah, the Dodgers in 2022. That's where he was.
Okay.
I forgot about that. Crazy to think I forget Kimbrel was a Dodger.
But I mean, for a Red Sox fan point of view, if Kimbrel's their closer, I wouldn't mind seeing Baltimore in the playoffs against the Red Sox, because I know Kimbrel probably can't lock it down.
Yeah, seriously.
Like, he's trying to, you know, if you want to talk about one weakness, like, he's not a lights out closer anymore. He's just not, you know. And the rest of the team is solid. Every prospect I saw on the board. I don't know if you were the, you went to, did you go to one of the Orioles games? You did, right?
Yeah, I went to opening day.
You know how when the guy's up, it's like first pick in the draft, second pick in the draft, third, every single guy. And I was at the game with my dad. He goes, what are they, the first pick in the draft? Like every single year? It's like, no wonder why they're so damn good. And I'm like, yeah. And now they have a new owner so they can actually keep these guys.
Yeah. That's scary. And like, so I think the Orioles, it's like a two-edged sword for the Orioles because they tanked, but I don't really think they tanked in the sense that they were like, our goal is to lose 110 games.
They were just
so
bad.
Like in 2018 was the first year of the rebuild. And like, that was the first year that they were really, really bad. And but they opened that year with Chris Davis on the roster. Mark Trumbo was still there. I think Adam Jones was still there. They had Zach Britton. They had Manny Machado. They had all those guys still there. They just were. I think Jonathan Scope might have still been there too. They were just horrible. And then they traded everybody, which is what you do with the deadline. You trade your guys so you can get prospects back. And then 2019, they were just flat out terrible. Like, I don't think they had any intention of competing, but I don't think they were like seeking 110 losses. I just think they just had a very talentless roster. Not a lot of guys that were ready for, like, it was almost like a, we'll see what we have with all of these guys. Cause I remember like Renato Nunez hit like 35 home runs. Like they had some decent players. Trey Mancini really broke out at that point in time as well, who was also there in 2018, by the way. He was pretty good for a few years. And then 2020, the Red Sox were the team tanking. The Orioles didn't even finish in last place. And then in 2021, the Orioles started to ascend as some of these young guys started to come up. I don't remember how many games they lost in 2021, but I think it's like, yeah, they ended up being an absolute trash can for like 4 or 5 years. How many games did they lose in 2021?
102.
Oh no, they lost 110 games in 2021. I am completely misremembering that. Let me see who was even on that roster. Okay. Maybe they did tank. Never mind. that team is so bad. I mean, Mountcastle came up that year. I think he's really good. Austin
wasn't
Hayes.
Wasn't Yastrzemski on one of those teams? I think because I remember seeing him throw. No,
I don't think so. No, he was
on the Orioles.
He was on the Orioles prospect.
He never made the majors with the Orioles?
No, I don't think so. Mountcastle came up that year. Mountcastle's rookie year was 2021. Santander, who's still there and really good. Cedric Mullins was really good. They had Mancini. They had Austin Hayes, who was an all-star last year. So, I mean, maybe they didn't tank. They really did in the pitching department. I mean, John Means is fine, but like everybody else that started a game for them that year was terrible. I mean, they brought back Matt Harvey, Jorge Lopez before they put him in the bullpen. Maybe, I don't know. I don't think they really tanked as opposed to like they just happened to also be fucking horrible. Like the A's are tanking. Mm-hmm. Right. Although we'll get into them in a little bit when we talk more MLB wide stuff. Anything else about the Red Sox before we move into the MLB at large?
I just think attendance is, I was curious because like I went to the game after opening day and I was like, okay, I wonder how bad this is going to be. And like my barometer is how busy the Yard House is. On like the weekend, you can't get in there typically. And I went on a Wednesday. And I'm like, where's the crowd? You know, and there was nobody there. There was no buses out. It was during the week. But I forget exactly what the attendance was the day after, but that's kind of like a good barometer of like, oh, but everybody goes opening day. And then it's like, what happens after that? I think the attendance is going to be a big thing. And then I don't know, Jordan, if you'd want to talk about any of the Lucchino stuff, how certain people weren't at the funeral and some people were. I know that it was really funny because, you know, it's 180 degrees of separation, but so you know Janet Marie Smith, right? But she helped build the park. She did a lot of stuff at Fenway.
Yeah,
she was there, and they were talking about Larry. And then what was really strange is Henry wasn't there. They said he was sick, and they said that Tom Warner was in England. But 48 hours before, they were both at Fenway. But so who's the delegate from the Red Sox ownership? Linda, Henry's wife, who's the one who took the job from Janet Marie Smith to do stuff around the park. And then she went to go work, I think, for the Dodgers with Dr. Charles. So it was just kind of weird how like that whole big, I was trying to follow it today. And I think a lot of people acknowledge what happened, that it was kind of bizarre. They weren't there. And then I guess the backstory basically is that they blame Lucchino for Valentine. And then so things have been bitter ever since then. That was 2011. That's a long time.
So. Yeah. You'd like to think that grown men would be able to settle differences when one of them dies. I know Larry Lucchino towards the end of his time with the Red Sox started to kind of fall out of favor within the fan base. A lot of it was because of Bobby Valentine. They really, I mean, Larry Lucchino was a driving force in him becoming the Red Sox manager. So it definitely soured on people. But my I mean, my experience with Larry is a little different because I, as a Jimmy Fund patient, you know, like the, that obviously being the Red Sox number one charity, you know, my experience with Larry, it's funny. Like my, the first, one of the first times I ever met him was in 2005. They did like Rally Monday before the playoffs against the White Sox. And like, I'm talking to Larry Lucchino and just like out of nowhere, he, I was like, yo, can you get me a water? Like, I just like bark an order at the Red Sox chairman. I'm like, hey, yo, I'm like, yo, get me a water. I don't even think I asked nicely. I'm like, yo, get me water. Me as a 5 year old, like, hey, very rich man. Shoo, go get me a water. He did get me a water though. Good guy.
Was this before or after you? Was this before or after you? You had a cameo in Fever Pitch. Were you a movie star at that, point?
It was. It was after. Yeah, it was after.
So you were like in 14 minutes of the 15 minute of fame. You were like right on the part.
I'm like, I don't have much time left with this, with being like cute enough to continue being trot out here. So get me a water while I can still order you to do so. No, but Larry's always been great to me. I saw him back in September, I want to say. Yeah, it was September. I saw him at Polar and then again at Fenway because they did like a whole thing for him. I don't remember if John Henry was there for that. I know Sam Kennedy was. I don't remember if John Henry and Tom Werner were a part of that ceremony. I'd have to look back on it. I know Dr. Charles was, and again, Sam Kennedy was, and like Alex Cora and everybody. And then for some reason I also was, but yeah. It was heartbreaking when finding out that he'd passed. He did not, I will say, he did not look like he was in great health when I saw him in September. I remember talking to some people and being like, it's crazy. You see it like, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, he looked strong as an ox. And then like, it looked like in those 3 years he'd aged 15. So it's really sad. And like, my heart goes out to Lucchino, the Lucchino family, and, you know, people close to him. This is a very difficult time for all of Red Sox Nation and Woo Sox Nation. And even the Orioles too, because he was a big part of Camden Yards and the construction there. But yeah, if John Henry was truly sick, who knows, because they've been lying to us for years. But if he was truly sick, I get it. Tom Werner being in England, that's inexcusable. Like, I mean, come on, man. You couldn't delay your business meeting by a day. You couldn't reschedule to attend this man's funeral. Like, he is a huge part of everything that your ownership group has been a part of, whether like, I know that Liverpool is more probably John Henry than anybody, but like, like Larry's, like Fenway Sports Group, you won 3 World Series with him as part of the organization out of your 4. You really couldn't have been like appreciative of what he had done to the point where like, you're just skipping his funeral. Like, I'm sorry. I don't think there is an excuse unless Werner had like an ill family member in England, which I don't think is true. More details have to come out about that, but like, as it stands right now, if John Henry is sick, totally get it. I mean, his wife was there, so I would like to think if he wasn't sick, he would have been. But Tom Werner not being there, that is inexcusable and flat out disrespectful. And that, and after an off season of Tom Werner putting his foot in his own mouth and being an asshole about, you know, the full throttle thing, Way to redeem yourself by skipping this man's funeral. Like, you, that is douchey and disrespectful. And I, the respect that if any Red Sox fan still had a shred of respect for that ownership group. And again, I don't want to like completely rag on them because they have done so much for this organization. It should be gone now. That is inexcusable. You cannot skip that man's funeral. I don't care if you hated him. I don't care if you grew to hate him. Bury your differences and go attend this man's funeral because he was part of something special with all of you.
I always thought Lucchino was the balls. He was the one who was like, Henry's like, I don't know, should I do this? And Warner's like, I don't know. And Lucchino was the guy who like, do it, get it done. And I think that like in this offseason especially, you're seeing that voice isn't there anymore. And Theo's involved now, but I think it was too little too late, but whatever. But there's no guy who's like saying, who's breaking chairs, who's yelling at people. It's there's no passionate fans involved with the ownership right now. It's business people. And that's what we're saying. And you need a guy like Lucchino in a group who might be irrational, might say, hey, bring in Valentine, whatever. You're not going to hit on every single thing either. You're going to make mistakes. Rick Pitino joined the Celtics. I mean, things happen, you know, things go wrong. but you need a guy to push, because right now they don't have that, and they try and make the safe move, and the safe move almost turns into no move, and it's just boring, and it's frustrating for fans.
Yeah, and like it, maybe it's a bad analogy because the Patriots are still in tailspin looking for their next quarterback, but it almost felt like going to Bobby Valentine was like going from Tom Brady to Cam Newton. Like, it was like, okay, maybe it works. Oh, it didn't. Honestly, not shocked, but like it could have. But we'll move on. And like, again, maybe it's not the greatest analogy because the Patriots then added another guy and then that guy sucked. But regardless, but regardless, that's kind of how it felt. And like you said, like, you know, this organization lacks the chutzpah, the fortitude to make these bold decisions. Like the biggest, like the bold decisions that they make now is like detracting from the roster, like trading Mookie Betts. That's a bold decision. It's not a good one, but it's bold. Everyone could have told you it was not a good decision. Not bringing back Xander Bogaerts. So far, I honestly think that looks like a good decision, but that's a bold choice to make. Like, you went from, I know they were planning on it being Story last year, then he had to have the elbow surgery. You went from Xander Bogaerts to Kike Hernandez. Like, holy cow. Like, that. And, like, you tried to put a band-aid on it with Adalberto Mondesi, who proved to not be a real person. Like, he's not, like, he's still a free agent because I don't think anyone can reach him. Like, nobody can call him and be like, hey, you interested in playing ball, buddy? Because, like, nobody
he's at the Holiday Inn in Denham right now. I think he's squatting. That's the last I've heard.
I have no idea where Adalberto Mondesi is. But, like, yeah, like, I mean, did they make a $300 million offer to Yamamoto? Like, who knows, really? Like, there have been reports that they were, reports that they did, reports that they didn't. But, like, a guy like Lucchino, there's no way they would not have ended up with Yamamoto, or at least given him the best offer. And if he ultimately decided on the Dodgers, it would have been because he would have preferred the Dodgers.
It would have been public too.
Yeah. He would have been like,
gave this guy this much money and he said no. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Lucchino would have been like, yeah, we gave him $375. He wanted to be a Dodger. Like we would have known about it before Yamamoto even knew about it.
Right.
Like that. Yeah. It's a huge loss, and like I don't know if anybody else at Pesky was at opening day. I will mention briefly the tribute they did to Tim Wakefield, Stacy Wakefield, and Larry Lucchino on opening day. It was so touching. I didn't tweet the whole thing because I can't, like, I wanted to record the screen, like the Jumbotron, so people could see the video that weren't there. Unfortunately, the quality is garbage. So I then ended up just recording a video of like the 04 team being revealed from behind the banner on the monster. That was a really touching tribute. And Brianna Wakefield, Tim's daughter, Tim and Stacey's daughter, threw out the first pitch to Jason Veritek, which was a really touching moment as well. That was beautiful. The Red Sox always hit those tributes out of the park. They've done for
Jordan,
no matter
do you have any do you have any stories about Tim? Did you ever get to meet him in your passing? Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it must be all positive, but I'm just curious if you've ever, your interactions.
Yeah, I'd met Tim a few times. The most recent time I spoke with him, I want to say like 2015. It was at a Jimmy Fun Gala. Maybe it was 2016, but yeah, he was the nicest human being like ever. I know people will like come out of the woodworks to talk about, say nice things about people who have passed, and it's always like, oh, nicest guy you'll ever meet. Tim Wakefield was truly the nicest person ever. Like he'd stop at nothing to help anybody who needed his help. Like I'm sure the impact he's had on the community. Like, he's definitely touched more lives than just mine and had a more impactful interaction with more people than me. But every single time I met, I got a chance to speak to him, like, and like his memory was exquisite. Like I hadn't seen him before that Jimmy Fund Gala in years. And he knew me by name. Like, I mean, I like went up to him and shook his hand. I'm like, hey, Tim, how you doing? He's like, Jordan, nice to see you, dude. How you been? But the world was a much better place, you know, 6 to 7 months ago before he passed. Yeah. And I cannot imagine the pain that family is going through, having to deal
with that's crazy. Yeah.
Tim's death and then Stacy's 5 months later, just absolutely tragic. It's been a really sad 6 months for Red Sox fans, like anybody in the community. Even if you're not a Red Sox fan and you just were, you know, a Jimmy Fund patient, you know, he was always there on days off, always made sure to take the time to talk to kids. It feels so weird that he's not here. And like, it's not like he was like a frequent, like, broadcast booth, you know, even the pre and post, like, it's not like he was always a part of that, but knowing that he's not going to ever be part of that again is still so raw. And like, I'm not somebody that cries very often. I was choked up several times on opening day throughout throughout that tribute. It was beautifully done. Sarah McKenna, you know, hats off to you. You always hit those out of the ballpark, seriously. And everybody else involved as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It really, like, again, the one thing I do want to mention, which is maybe kind of takes away from it a little bit, though, we don't have to mention he who must not be named, a certain former pitcher that wasn't there. I was really weird to not see Mirabelli. I thought if there was anybody that would be there, it'd be Doug, but he wasn't. I don't know why.
Yeah, that is a little,
I don't know if maybe he wasn't invited because apparently he who must not be named, that certain former Red Sox pitcher, got the information from Mirabelli.
Maybe he didn't come
because of, out of like embarrassment, because like that, like that he was entrusted with that information and then he let it be known to somebody else who then made it public. I don't know if there was, I don't know what it was. Maybe there was some conflict. Maybe he wasn't feeling well, whatever. But it was curious to not see Mirabelli there because there is like no Wakefield on the mound without Doug Mirabelli. And like, especially when you're doing a tribute to the 04 team, you'd think Mirabelli would be a part of that, as at least on behalf of Wakefield, even though he wasn't like the greatest player.
That is strange. I didn't notice that, but, he wasn't there. And then was Bellhorn wasn't there as well. Is that right?
I don't think Bellhorn was there. Also learned that Pokey Reese's name is Calvin. Learned that. That was interesting. Because I saw Calvin Reese as, Calvin Reese listed as one of the players there. I was like, Calvin Reese? Pokey? His name's Calvin? I don't know why I thought it was Pokey, but Calvin was a shock.
I saw all the names, Jordan, and it reminded me of like an episode of Pawn Stars. They're like, we have a World Series ring from 2004. And you're like, who the hell was that? And then you realize, that's why it's for sale.
Like, who was Calvin Reese? Who was Connor Crespo? Who was that? Cesar Crespo? I don't remember his name.
A lot of coaches were there as well. I know, right? There was like a lot of people there.
Surprised Tito wasn't there though. But he did do
did a video, and then he was there the night before, and then he left, which I thought was a little weird too. So
yeah, he did. He did do a video, and like that aired on MLB Network. Another tearjerker. I watched that. I stopped for dinner on the way back from the game. Watched that. I got choked up again. Mm-hmm. Again, so shocking and like so raw that he's gone. It really doesn't feel right. But yeah. So before we move, I'll leave it to you for before we go to MLB at large. Is there anything else that we didn't cover that you want to bring up?
I think we pretty much covered. I mean, I wanted to get your perspective on things. I think you have a unique relationship with the team, with some of the individuals involved. So I don't know how you feel, but I thought it was nice to get some reflections on Lucchino and Wakefield. And I'm sure that probably makes you feel good just acknowledging and getting that off your chest a little bit too, because probably people don't ask you how you feel about that. But I think it's kind of a unique relationship, and it's nice to get that perspective.
Yeah, it was. It was nice to kind of talk about it, because not a lot of, like, my dad, when it happened, obviously he's my dad. Like he asked me how I felt about it, but people don't think, cause I wasn't a player, obviously people don't think like, oh, how are you handling the news? Because he did have such a direct impact on my life, as did Wake. Mm-hmm. So it was nice to talk about.
Great.
So we'll move on now to talk MLB at large.
Sure.
I do want to talk, and it does kind of have a Red Sox connection, because Mr. Jordan Montgomery made an appearance yesterday in AAA, and he got smoked. I don't remember exactly what his line was. It was like something in the vicinity of like 4 innings, 9 hits, 7 runs. I think he walked 2, struck out 2, gave up like 3 home runs. He was horrible. I'll find the exact line, but he was bad.
This was AAA too, right?
This was in AAA, yes. I remember seeing Cade Marlowe homered off of him. I think that is
the household name.
I want to say that is the Mariners organization.
Okay.
I'm trying to find it.
Oh, like in the Pacific Coast League or something? Wow, all right.
Okay. Yeah, and the PCL. I mean, so I will say in defense of Monty, this PCL is an absolute like bandbox, like the offensive environment there. Everybody, like every team hits the daylights out of the ball. Mm-hmm. So like I remember when the D-backs called up Brandon Pfaadt, his ERA in AAA was like 7. And everyone was like, why are you bringing this dude up? His ERA was 7. Maybe because it's impossible to get out since in the PCL. But yeah, it was interesting to see. Like Monty, I feel like guys that are big leaguers, and again, I'm not saying Monty is suddenly washed up, but I feel like big leaguers tend to find a way to get outs. Like, I mean, Kyle Barraclough had like a 2.5 ERA last year in AAA. we saw his MLB experience last year in Boston.
Yeah, it was an experience.
It was definitely an experience. It was definitely one of the runs of all time that I've ever seen. But yeah, he did not look very good yesterday. He got lit up. You know, the Red Sox rotation definitely hasn't lived up to the first trip through. I mean, that was an impossible standard to hold up. But I still largely think they've been pretty good. Say for Bayo start in Oakland, Houck's start the other night against the Angels. Mm-hmm. And let me think who started the MB Bayo was good in the opener. Yeah. It was really the bullpen. The guy those last called up two nights.
From Worcester did good. Yeah. He did all right.
Yeah. Criswell looked good. And Monty looked really, really bad again in the PCL. So, I mean, I'm sure he'll be fine and he'll end up being good for the D-backs, but it was
way too early to say though, Jordan. What did they sign him for? What was this deal? What was the contract?
Like,
do you remember?
It was like 1 year, 25 mil with like a vesting option or a club option or whatever for, there was okay. an option for 2025.
Way too early to say. Is a good thing not spending the 25 on him so far?
I mean, yeah, it's mid-April. We'll see.
So you blow when you can, you know, you're like, oh, that would have been a waste of money.
It got to a point where it no longer made sense to sign him. Like, like I wouldn't have given him 25 mil for 1 year at the point that the D-backs did, because like at that point you're giving a guy 25 million. You're giving a guy 25 million to impact you in like mid-May onward. Like he's not going to be in the majors for a bit. But speaking of guys,
he did fire Boris though, right? As well too.
He did. Yeah. So for that, maybe he was worth 25 million because he's the first big name to can Scott Boras's ass for the train wreck that was his agency in the offseason this year. Scott Boras is a great agent. He tends to get the most for his guys, but oh my Lord, did he misjudge the market this offseason? Mm-hmm. And Monty, I feel bad for the guy. I mean, dude was just the number one pitcher on a World Series winner and he didn't sign until like 5 minutes before opening day. That's a sham. And I don't think that's just teams not wanting to spend money on the guy. But a guy who did get signed to a multi-year deal. That was another guy kind of on the Red Sox radar, at least from a fan base standpoint, kind of on our periphery. Blake Snell got smoked by the Rays today. So we're talking about the MLB at large, but you know, we are still Red Sox fans. So again, like Brian said, we gloat while you can. The Rays lit that man up, beat him like he stole something today. Gave up 7 runs, I think, in 4 innings, I want to say. He was not good. His ERA, hold on, sorry, I have Pablo Reyes' stats on my screen. I don't know why. I wanted to pull Blake Snell, and I had Pablo Reyes because apparently that man's always on my mind. He's only made 2 starts this year. The first one, he went 3, allowed 3 runs in those 3 innings, struck out how many? Struck out 5 in those 3 innings. He was a Blake Snell start. Today, 4 innings. He gave up 6 hits, 7 runs, walked 2, fanned 4. So his ERA, granted 2 starts, only been 7 innings, 12.86. That would be the, just for those checking, that would be the worst in the Red Sox rotation. Just so we're clear, would be the worst in the Red Sox rotation, worse than Cooper Criswell. By the way, Cooper Criswell has a better ERA than Yoshinobu Yamamoto as well. Just want to make that clear.
I did check out Yankees Twitter. They said, well, this is why we didn't sign Snell. We knew it wasn't going to work. We knew, you know. So Yankees Twitter is already confident that, you know, it was, you know, that not signing Snell was the move. Even though I know when Cole, you know, went on the DL, it was like, we got to get him. We got to get him. New York Post, all the papers were lighting up. Oh, yeah, he's going to New York. He's going to New York. Now, of course, after this, after today, they're like, no, no, no. See, we knew what we were doing. We you know, you don't want Snell.
Yeah, I do want to correct myself. Cooper Criswell and Yamamoto actually have the same ERA. I lied a moment ago. That is on me. I will wear that. But yeah, again, this is going to be very clippable, you know, as the season wears on and both Snell and Monty are great and Yamamoto is vying for NL Rookie of the Year, if not Cy Young. But so far, the Red Sox don't look like assholes for not signing these three. And that is more a testament to Andrew Bailey than the personnel that they have.
Sure.
For sure, even as good as Garrett Whitlock has looked as a starter, would much rather him be in the bullpen with, you know, Monty or Snell or Yamamoto in the rotation. But, you know, right now, I think they still have the best rotation ERA in the league. And probably, I'm going to double check that. I know that they've been kind of neck and neck with Kansas City of all teams, which I think is crazy. They've been, let me see, live stats, full season, the best ERA. Yeah, the Red Sox 2.05 ERA for their starting rotation. That is the best of the majors by about half a run. Royals at 2.46, and then the Yankees in third at 2.99, which is actually kind of shocking as well. I thought the Yankees rotation was going to be a mess without Gerrit Cole. They've actually been really good. But yeah, I mean, I know I said we're going to talk about MLB at large and then immediately started talking about the Red Sox again. But, you know, so far, Andrew Bailey has done miracles on me. And what can I say? That man also got the biggest ovation of, I think, anybody on the Red Sox on opening day, except for maybe Devers, which is hilarious. Like, that's how far the mighty have fallen, that the biggest ovation on opening day goes to the damn pitching coach. But that's where we are as a fan base and as an organization. Welcome back to Boston, Andrew Bailey. Everyone went crazy for him.
I know we want to switch back to Major League Baseball, but there's also a left-handed pitcher in the Red Sox bullpen, not named Bernardino, who's had a pretty nice run the last couple appearances.
Yes, he has. Joely Rodriguez. he's no longer Lord Voldemort. He's finally got his name back. He's allowed to be referred to by name again. That first outing. Okay, so let me throw this around here. So his first outing, he got blitzed by Dylan Moore and gave up a home run. I thought other than that, he was fine on opening day. I mean, obviously, home runs, giving them up, sucks. Like, that's not good. Like, you're not going to have a good outing if you are a reliever and one of the four guys you face hit a home run. He was horrible the two nights later in extra innings, which I still am dumbfounded that he was in that spot. Since then, let me go and filter this. Since then, he's made five appearances. He's gone four innings total, 16 batters. He's allowed three hits. He's walked one, struck out three. So he's not missing bats because he throws 88 miles an hour, but he hasn't allowed an earned run. He's allowed one run. It was unearned against the Orioles on the 11th. I think that was opening. No, that was not opening day. He allowed one unearned run though. Oh yeah. Because it was the, I think Weiser gave up the home run to, Anthony Santander after, a man reached. Yeah. Cause he didn't give up a hit. I think that was the Hamilton didn't touch second base and then Santander homered. But yeah, I mean, since then, I mean, the average exit velocity against him is 82 miles an hour. Two out of every three batted balls against him are on the ground. He's looked really good. I mean, he doesn't need the velocity to be good. He's keeping hitters off balance. And now he will get smoked tomorrow because we gave him some credit.
Yeah.
But I mean, his ERA for the season's under four again. Like, it's 3.38.
As good as he's been, the Wednesday game, Campbell looked like, I don't know, like he's not a pitch anymore that Wednesday night. I don't know what he was doing. And did they put him on the IL or he's hurt or something? Yeah, because he was amazing in Seattle. And you're like, wow, this guy, who is this guy? And then he comes in the game, they get a nice lead, you know, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, I know why we got this guy now, because if he's going to pitch like that, nobody's going to want him. He had nothing, absolutely nothing that night.
Yeah, he was brutal. Both nights he pitched both games and he was horrible in both. I know Martin was the guy who really got smoked, and
don't talk about that. Move on. Just leave that alone.
I will acknowledge that he did not pitch today in the eighth inning because he had left shoulder soreness. Cora said it. I don't believe he mentioned whether it was serious or not, but he said they were trying to avoid him because they didn't want him to mess himself up trying to overcompensate for the pain he was feeling. Fair enough. It's April. You don't want to push your guys. If this were August, I bet he probably would have pitched. He didn't pitch today. Justin Slayton went 2 2/3, was awesome again.
He finally gave up a run. I love that guy. He's amazing.
He finally gave up a run because he learned that Mike Trout is good. Gave him a triple to him. He wasn't going to get out of that jam. He gave a leadoff triple to Mike Trout. Sorry, Justin, that you had to learn this way that Mike Trout is good at baseball. He probably underestimated him because he read the Bleacher Report top 10 center fielders entering the season and was like, oh, this man's not top five anymore. Cool. I'll throw this sweeper middle and down right in his wheelhouse, and he'll probably whiff because he's terrible. But no, he hit a triple because Mike Trout's still good at baseball. Still probably a top two or three center fielder in the game. Let's respect the future Hall of Famer. Yeah, let's respect the guy. I know Kenley Jansen obliterated him in the ninth inning, but maybe he is washed then. Who knows?
it was fun. All right, moving on.
Justin Slayton also, I know we keep bouncing back to the Red Sox, so this is probably going to be mostly Red Sox, and it's fair because when we go back to MLB, we're going to talk about another former Red Sox anyway. We'll mention Chris Sale and how he's doing, but Slayton came in the sixth inning with first and third, one out. I believe it was 3-2 at the time. Threw one pitch. I think it was to Brandon Drury. Got a 5-4-3 double play. So two things: one, gigantic pitch, huge spot to get that double play. Two, oh my God, the Red Sox turned a double play. Those were the two things that went through my mind. The ground ball was hit, and I went, "Fuck, it's tied." That was what I said verbally. Yep. I was like, oh my God, fuck, it's tied. Double play got turned. I was beside myself. I started screaming like a little girl. It was incredible. I witnessed history twice. Red Sox turned a double play. Bobby Dalbec got on base. The two things that I thought were impossible happened today. Also, Yoshida homered against the lefty. First Fenway homer since July. So I guess three things that are impossible happened today. So maybe I should go more often.
The hat trick.
I got the baseball version of the Gordie Howe, I guess. Although I didn't get in a fight.
You got into a fight in the parking lot?
No, I did not get into a fight. Although I would have if Kenley didn't strike out Mike Trout. I would have probably stormed the field and given him a piece of my mind. I was literally throughout that ninth inning, I was trying to prepare my monologue for when we got on today about how I was going to attack Kenley Jansen, because that man, it was something to the extent of, you did all that bitching all offseason about how not competitive this team was going to be, about how you felt lied to, how dramatic you were being. And again, in fairness, he was well within his right to say that. We all felt it. For if he had blown today, he would have been directly correlated to two losses the Red Sox have had out of what would have been eight at that point. You were the closer of the team, 16 games in. You sleeping funny. Forced them to use Joely Rodriguez in extra innings against the Mariners. And then you not being good almost cost them today. But he buckled down, struck out Trout because Trout's washed. I know I said a minute ago he was great. He's washed up. He is fake. He is a loser. This is why he has 6 home runs and 8 runs batted in, because when you put a guy in scoring position, he chokes, apparently. And that's why the Angels never make the playoffs. It is entirely Mike Trout's fault. Now I feel like the Milwaukee Brewers talking to Corbin Burns when they were in the arbitration hearing. I'm like, it's all your fault they missed the playoffs.
He did strike out in the WBC, as well. He's not clutch.
Yeah. Not
clutch. That was his moment to shine, and he just couldn't. Yeah, he couldn't do it.
Boston has progressed past the need for a player like Mike Trout. I'm sorry. We don't like these fake stats. We got rid of another known postseason choker in Mookie Betts. So I can't believe I said that unironically. Still miss you, Mookie. Please demand a trade and come back to Boston. I love you and miss you.
How about the other scrub that is leading the league in hitting right now, Justin Turner?
Yeah.
Like, you know, why can't we get players like that, right? I mean, he'd solve a few problems, but.
Yeah, especially with Devers out, because he would have been able to play third instead of Bobby Dalbec, who, to his credit, has actually been kind of a calming influence at third base because he fields the ball. But because he makes plays. But yeah, JT has been missed early, especially because the team as a whole has not hit very well. They've started to kind of bust out of their shell lately. In this Angel series, other than the opener, I thought they had very good at bats against Grayson Rodriguez, who's a tough guy to hit against. They're not going to let him up very often now that he's in the major league team. I think the bats have woken up a little bit. Casas especially has been awesome lately. In April, he's got a batting average of like 350. He's reaching basically like a 40% clip, and he's got four home runs this month. He was a slow starter last year. A lot of people gave up on him after April. A lot of people were willing to completely forget that he was the best hitter on the team after from May 1st onward last season. And we're like, this guy sucks. They should trade him. Don't extend him because Seattle has good pitching. And he couldn't hit a slider in a four-game sample size. He's very good. And the Red Sox would be stupid to not extend him. I am not but yeah, he's awesome as well. Tied with Mark Sloan of the Braves. I don't know. Did I just get frozen?
Yeah, I lost you for a second there.
Okay. My internet just kind of popped out for a sec, but where did you lose me? I was talking about O'Neill also being good.
You said O'Neill and then bing, bing. Then as soon as you said the word O'Neill, it cut out. So.
Okay. Yeah. So O'Neill also good. Where would they be without him? He's been a machine, also leads the league in home runs, leads the American League in home runs, tied for the major league lead with Ozuna from the Braves. But we can go back to MLB talk unless you got anything, any more like notes about the Red Sox. We'll leave the minor league guys, all the prospect stuff. We don't need to talk about them.
I think that's pretty much it. I mean, I just kind of, you know, I think that, you know, going back to what we said, it was kind of like, okay, 7-3, and then you kind of get your ass handed to you with like a real team. And then, you know, you shoot yourself in the foot because you can't play defense. And then I think they're better than the Angels, and they're going to have to beat up on the teams that aren't that good if they have a chance. If they lose to teams like the Angels, they're screwed. They're going to be a 78-win team. If they beat up on teams like the Angels, they're going to be at least 500, maybe more team. They're still going to have that one month where they're going to be hot, and they're going to have that one month where they're going to be the worst team in baseball. It's going to happen. That's just how they are. You know, they snowball. Things happen. Like all these injuries, like Pivetta being out, we haven't even talked about that. I mean, he was amazing. Everyone was like, give him an extension. I want that guy on my team. He missed, one start or two starts? But the guy who came out from Worcester, I mean, he was fine. But the second time through the rotation, third time, whatever, you know, I mean, yeah, they come a little back to earth, but their pitching is still good. Their pitching is going to be okay. Their defense needs to be better. And I think they just need to be healthy. If Devers is healthy in all these games, I think you're going to see a different outcome in a lot of these games. That's what it comes down to, you know? I think mentally, without him in the lineup, I think the other guys press a little bit, unfortunately.
Yeah, for sure. I remember last year when Duvall got hurt. They were horrible weeks. And then Duvall came back, and they, as a team, hit a lot better, even though Duvall was not good. For about 25 games, Duvall was not doing much after returning from his broken wrist. So people look at performance, and that obviously performance is what makes your lineup good or not. But that presence means the world. Like even Story being in there, despite Story not having a great season, at the plate to that point, although his offense was starting to kind of come around, he was starting to put the ball in play more, hit the ball harder. Again, gutted that he's going to miss another season. That contract was, I think, good process, bad results. Like in hindsight, I'd still give him that contract. It's just unfortunate. It's almost like the Sale extension. Like in hindsight, you don't give Trevor Story that contract. He goes somewhere else. He's great. You don't bring Bogarts back, and your middle infield is unironically Pablo Reyes, Danielson, and Moss. And that is your middle infield, like on purpose, like not by injury. So again, it's similar to the Sale extension. You don't give him an extension, he shoves in 2019, you lose him to Houston or the Yankees, and he never gets hurt. So good process, bad results there. But
right.
I mentioned Sale. We'll talk about him getting lit up by the worst team in baseball. because a lot of people, and like, I love Chris Sale. It hurt me. Like almost fell when I saw that he got traded. Especially since the Sox ate 17 out of the 27 mil that he's owed. A lot of people watched him in spring training and they were like, look at how stupid the Red Sox are. They've done it again. They've traded a really good player and got nothing in return because Vaughn Grissom was hurt and he's obviously still hurt. But Chris Sale just got smoked by the Marlins yesterday. I think he went, seven? He did go seven innings through 100 pitches, but he did give up five runs to the worst team in the majors, or maybe the second worst now. That they beat, by the way, they beat Chris Sale. So, right? They won.
Marlins did he won go seven innings, though?
I believe so. I believe he did. I thought I saw somebody say that he ended up going seven or throwing 100 pitches. I'll double check that.
Yeah, I think he went.
He went seven.
Oh, wow. All right.
He went seven, struck out seven, walked three, gave up a home run, six hits, five earned. Chris Sale is good. And they miss him, but reminder, the Red Sox have the best rotation ERA in baseball, and Chris Sale just lost to the worst team in the league. So, again, not many opportunities to gloat when it comes to Red Sox pitching over the past few years. Let's take a victory lap here.
What do you think of the extension, though, that they gave Sale? Isn't that, like, completely clown shoes crazy?
I honestly, like, I floated the idea out there at the beginning of the offseason that I would not hate buying out Chris Sale's vesting option year of 2025 and adding another year and giving him like the extension he got basically from the Braves, but as if it were 24, 25, 26. I think he signed through 27.
Yeah.
I could be wrong though, but I would have rather extended Sale than give Giolito a contract. I still feel firmly about that. I felt that at the time as well. I would have much rather extended Sale and not sign Giolito. Though if you don't trade Sale, your second baseman is unironically Edmanuel Valdez, and I think Valdez is going to be a good major league hitter. Hasn't been so far, but defensively that's a mess. Vaughn Grissom is more athletic, so I think he'll project pretty well at second, and he's a good hitter. So, and they need righties as well.
Do you think that so Story's on the team for quite a while? Does he slide to second base? And then Grissom becomes a utility player. I mean, I know we're a ways out, but I mean, everybody says Mayer is going to be a shortstop. So where does Story go? He's got to go to second, right?
I would say probably Story moves to second, which will be good for him because it's a less physically demanding position. I think Mayer is definitely going to be their shortstop. Devers will still, I think he's still at third until Story's contract's up, or until Yoshida's contract's up, I should say. Then he might shift to DH. Vaughn Grissom, in all seriousness, as much as I love him, could very well be a guy who plays here for a year, is great, and then you use him as a prospect next year to trade for a guy like Luzardo because the Marlins are going to be looking for middle infield help again, because again, they're stupid and they don't know how to actually field a major league roster. I still can't believe they gave Tim Anderson a contract and got rid of John Birdie, who, by the way, is better than Tim Anderson and making less money than him. The Marlins are dumb, and they proved that by firing Kim Ng as well. It's definitely that team is stupid. They'll definitely be in the market for another middle infielder, and you can trade Vaughn Grissom to them, or you keep him. I know people have talked about the possibility of Grissom moving to the left field or right field. Again, Tyler O'Neill is only a 1-year guy right now. I would extend Tyler O'Neill before his price tag gets too high. I think
he's a classic Fenway right-handed hitter. He seems to, I don't know what to read into it, but I know in the offseason he does yoga now. I guess that's a new thing for him. He's always been jacked and lifts a lot, but he's always been not had the flexibility. And if you've ever not that I've done yoga often, but you get flexible in a hurry if you do yoga, let me tell you. So and that might be just what he needed to pr- for long, you know, to so he doesn't have these stupid freak injuries. I know he did miss a little time. It was in the Seattle series, I think. Didn't he miss some time? And I know recently they've been kind of resting him because they're afraid that, you know, I don't know if it's not going to be, you know, oh, what's his name there? The, like, you know, 2.0 with the, like, who was the guy last year, the right-handed hitter there who got hurt? Center field, Dunn. What was his name?
Duvall.
I mentioned him earlier. Duvall. You know how Duvall was on fire and then got hurt, you know. But hopefully if Tyler can stay healthy, he's got a great swing for Fenway, and you can play him in left field and right field and think you don't think anything of it.
Yeah, I definitely think Tyler O'Neill is somebody. Like, I will say this first and foremost, I was not crazy about trading for him. I think everything that we've seen about Tyler O'Neill isn't shocking. Like, he's a guy who, when he's hot, will hit a million home runs over the span of, you know, 10, 15 games. So he already got 7. Like I said, he's tied for the major league lead. The book on him in St. Louis was very similar to the book on Verdugo. Doesn't hustle. Kind of a clubhouse, you know, problem. Like, these were things that followed him from St. Louis. The plus side, and similar to Verdugo going to the Yankees, contract year. Like, right. He has to buy in because he's playing for his next contract. I do think that he also needed a change of scenery. I feel like St. Louis was always kind of pushing him out the door because they have Donovan. Right. They have Edmonds playing in the outfield now. They also have Dylan Carlson, Lars Nootbaar. Like, they have enough outfielders. So I think Tyler O'Neill kind of fell out of favor and in turn became an asshole. But since coming to Boston, I mean, he seems like a different person, similar to Verdugo with the Yankees, except Tyler O'Neill is good. So
something I wanted Jordan to ask you about Tyler O'Neill. Who's the first base coach of the Red Sox?
Adam Fox.
Is he really, really, really tall?
Yes, he's very tall.
Okay, because Tyler O'Neill got a hit or something, and my dad goes, there's no way Tyler O'Neill is 5'11". There's no way. Because he looked like Yoshida. It looked like Altuve and Judge. It was like, there's no way. And I showed him a picture of him. He goes, well, his arms are huge, but the rest of them isn't.
Yeah. Adam Fox is like a tall guy.
6'6 or 6'5. How tall is he?
Yeah, He and Casas are about the same height, I think. So.
Oh, really? Okay, all right.
I think so, yeah. So, Adam Fox, I have always thought Adam Fox was tall, but like, nobody really cares that the first base coach is tall. So, like, I didn't feel like ever bringing it up, but I've always thought that Fox was a freaking tree over there, which is fun. But, yeah. Tyler O'Neill, definitely somebody I could see the Red Sox extending. I have done a complete 180 on him. I thought that he would be good. They would trade him. They get prospects back, and that would be it. And I would be totally cool with that. Now, like, again, I don't want to fall prisoner to the moment. It's only been, I think, 14 games he's played in. But oh my God, that man has really won me over. Like, and the janitor throws are just chef's kiss. Absolutely love watching that man play the outfield. He's like Renfro on steroids, which is very fitting because he's jacked. So he definitely looks like Renfro on steroids, but that swing is tailor-made for Fenway Park. You talk, I'm about to start coughing.
All right, then.
Sorry. I felt a cough coming.
You choked up about Tyler O'Neill. I know you're getting emotional. And the other stuff, you're like, emotional. Yeah, whatever. But this is the sensitive stuff. I get it.
The thought of Tyler O'Neill not being a Red Sox anymore made me very sad. it's only April, but I'm ready to cry if Tyler O'Neill's not here in 2030.
I feel the same way.
But yeah. There was one thing MLB-wide that I wanted to mention just because it's so bizarre to me. Are the Oakland A's, like, not horrible? Like, they're 7-9.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, you said Texas, what, is 8-8 now? So, you know, they were the ones that were going to kind of lead the division. And then I know in the Seattle series, when the Red Sox did so good, weren't we talking about, okay, well, how good is Seattle? We know they had good starting pitching, but maybe they can't hit the ball at all. Maybe that's the case now. And then what do you have left at that point, you know? And then Houston, they've always kicked ass in the playoffs, but maybe they're, you know, maybe their time's up, you know, who knows? You know, a lot of those guys have been there for a while. You know, they're still professional hitters, great players and all, but, you know, maybe things are just kind of normalizing in the West finally.
Yeah. And to your point about the Mariners, only two teams in baseball have fewer runs scored than Seattle. Okay. One of them is Oakland, shockingly. Oakland does have fewer runs scored. Their run differential is better by one. They're negative 22 versus the Mariners being negative 23. But unshockingly, the worst offense in the league from a run scored standpoint, Chicago White Sox, 34 runs in 15 games.
That's bizarre because that place, the ball flies out of there. And it's the underrated, most underrated park. If you go there in person, it's beautiful. On TV, it looks like shit. I get to go there all the time because, I have a friend of mine that lives in Chicago, and you can walk up as you're in line, buy the ticket on StubHub or whatever, and walk right in for $5, sit wherever you want. Awesome. But the ball flies out of there, and it's easy to get to. You got the blue line and the green line right there to get to. And you can see the whole Red Sox series. Usually they play the Red Sox in May every year, and you can go out there for short money, and the flight's like really, really cheap. And Chicago is just a beautiful city. It's the north side of Chicago, south side of Chicago, stay away from. But even where the White Sox play is not the south side. They go, oh, it's a south side team. They're still in central Chicago. They're not, you know, next to where the Cubs play on the north side. But they're in the middle. But it's easy to get to. There's a lot to do. But you can see every single Red Sox game for like $20, like total for tickets.
That's
and the food's good. The beer vendors, Jordan, they have like five or six different beers. So when you ask for beer, the guy's like, what do you want? You go, what do you mean, what do I want? The guy goes, what type of beer do you want? And they have like five different beers. Yeah, it's really
great. Yeah, that is great. I'm not the biggest beer drinker, but I definitely have my taste. I'm tired of having to settle for Bud Light at Fenway. let me get some variety.
I'm tired of Sal's Pizza at Fenway. If I do one thing in my life, I want Regina's back, or even I'll settle for Papagino's. Even I cannot stand Sal's Pizza; it drives me nuts.
I haven't had Sal's at Fenway. I've been to like a Sal's Pizza in New York that's like actually a Sal's Pizza. That's good. Yeah.
Okay, I'm sure it is. Yeah.
Sal's at like I remember when I was in like middle school, we have like our lunch menu. And Friday was pizza day, and they would always be like, Sal's Pizza, garbage, absolute ass. It's not Sal's Pizza. I went to Sal's in Cooperstown. Just the best pizza I've ever had in my life. Had whatever the hell Sal's Pizza they give you in middle school. Vomit, garbage.
I want Frank Pepe's Pizza at Fenway Park. If I ever win the lottery and buy the team, that's my first order of business.
I mean, this we're talking about the Fenway experience. If the product on the field is not going to be good, they better have some exquisite food. And like every ballpark has like a signature food. Fenway's is fucking hot dogs. Like Fenway's signature food is a fucking hot dog. Like, I don't care. Like hot dog is like a staple at a ballpark, but like, I feel like every single, like even like they have a specialty hot dog, like the Dodger dog, like they have that. Fenway has a freaking regular ass hot dog, and you can put ketchup or mustard on it. Ooh, I could do that at home. Like, I don't have to spend $16 for a fucking hot dog. Give me some trademark ballpark food. I hope that is something that is incorporated into the so-called Fenway experience next year.
The Worcester Park blows away the Fenway for food. They lost BT Smokehouse, which is like the best possible barbecue you can ever have in your life. They lost that just because it didn't work out. But even losing them, the food is still better at Worcester than it is Fenway.
Oh, yeah. Polar Park is great. And to those of you watching, if you've never been, highly recommend.
Mm-hmm.
Another, like Larry Lucchino, masterpiece. Beautiful, beautiful ballpark. I remember... Like, it looks nice on TV. Like, I remember the first time I'd ever seen Polar Park was during Chris Sale's rehab assignment. Which one? I don't remember. There have been many over the years. Yep. But I finally got a chance to go to a game last year. Just a beautiful ball. Like, you want to talk about a good experience? That's a beautiful ballpark.
Yep. It's the best minor league ballpark probably out there right now.
I would agree, for sure. And that place is a bandbox, too. Like, you like home runs? You'll probably see a few. I remember going to the game after like Kyle Barraclough's first appearance after the nightmare at Fenway, and he had like two first inning home runs, but the Woo Sox won by like, it was like 12-9. There was like nine homers between the two teams. That the ball flies out of there. There's like a wind tunnel. You want to know why Franchi Cordero hit like a million homers in Worcester? That is why, because the ball flies out of there. Bobby Dalbec hit 33 homers last year because every time you hit the ball in the air, it goes over the fence.
I think Ryan LaVarnway's biggest regret about his minor league career is not playing at Worcester and hitting 50 home runs that year instead of 30.
Oh, like my God.
I'm crazy. Yeah.
I might have to shoot Ryan LaVarnway a DM and be like, hey, man, come back for one
year.
Super nice guy. Hang out in Worcester for 1 year as the DH. You will hit all the home runs. All of them.
I think he could roll out of bed and hit 50 home runs there right now. I think he could legit do that.
Yeah. Probably. I feel like if you gave me a BP, give me like a BP round, I could probably hit like four or five out. I'm not kidding. The ball flies out of there. Like, I am not a hitter. I was a pitcher only in high school. I feel like I could hit a ball out of that ballpark. Not to poo poo the guys that actually hit home runs, but you know what I mean. Anyway, anything else MLB-wide that you want to talk about before we wrap things up? We're coming up on an hour and 25 minutes at this point.
Not really. I mean, I think that, like you said, it's still April, so let's not overreact on anything at all, because if you're in first place on your fantasy team now, you probably won't be by the end of the season. So all those guys who are doing really well, you know, you got your stars, you know, you got guys that are washed up like Mike Trout, but, you know, in general, it's way too early to tell. The Red Sox pitching isn't this good. Guys like Oshida and some of these other guys will hit. At some point, some of these Red Sox guys will get healthy that we're missing now. And it's exciting to watch. I think if I had to ask you, Jordan, are you completely disappointed with how the team's going, or are you happy? I'm happy. I mean, they're above 500, you know, and they're not in last place. They're entertaining per se. They have the mistakes they have are fixable. It's not like, you know, we're a 100 loss team, and I think we're kind of right where we are. Maybe we're better than where we thought we would be.
Yeah, I thought that West Coast swing to start the season was going to doom them from the start. Similar to 2019, like, and that team was stacked still. I know their bullpen had some questions, but the rotation was the same as the World Series team. Their lineup was about the same, if not the same. I can't remember off the top of my head. And they went 3-8 on the West Coast swing, seven and three. Like, I if they had come home 5-5, I would have been ecstatic. I thought they were gonna go like 4-6, probably lose 3 or 4 to Seattle, take 2 of 3 against the A's, because the A's are not good, even though they're 7-9. Mm-hmm. And then whatever happens, some weird shit always happens in Anaheim. They would have probably found a way to lose that series as well. But yeah, they went 7-3. They're 2-4 at home. That sucks.
Yeah,
Alex Cora preached all spring training about needing to take care of business at home. So far, they haven't done that, but they were able. I mean, you get swept one series, you win another series, you're still going to be under 500 at home. It was nice for them to bounce back after losing the first four to win the last two. We'll see what happens against Cleveland. I'll be there again Wednesday with my dad. So if you're there Wednesday, come by, say hello, you or the people watching. I'll be there on Wednesday night.
Are you under the right field grandstand signing autographs, or are you going to be actually just watching the game?
Yeah, I mean, I know I'm a very, you know, I'm in high demand every time I go to Fenway. Like, people just flock to me. It's almost like I have to break a lot of hearts when I'm there and tell them, guys, I'm sorry, I'm here as a fan today. No, I'm kidding. I'm not full of myself. If anybody asks me for an autograph, I'm going to ask them if they're sure that they have the right person. Because
mental health is important. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd be like, are you sure that you are asking me? Yeah, no, I my 15 minutes of fame are long gone. Now I'm just a podcaster and a Red Sox Twitter shit poster. Right. Which I love it. I love the life I have right now. Ironically. But yeah, no, I'll be there Wednesday. Anybody there that wants to come say hi? My dad will be there too. You want to meet my father? It'll be more intimate than some of the relationships I've been in. So you guys will get to meet my parents. but yeah, no. So hopefully Red Sox can win another series against Cleveland. What are they here for, 4, or are they here for 3?
I think it's a four.
Yeah. Tomorrow's Patriots Day. The Red Sox always lose on Patriots Day, it feels like now. Hopefully that trend is bucked tomorrow. Who's pitching? I think it's Cutter versus Tanner Bibee, I want to say. Am I right? I have no idea.
I'm looking right now. I'm trying to figure out. So tomorrow we have Cutter versus Crawford versus Curry.
Xavien Curry, that is who is pitching. He has not pitched this season. Last year, Xavien Curry, 3-4, 41 appearances, 9 starts, 4.07 ERA. For those who don't know, he's BP and MLB The Show, so that means he's going to go 6 and allow 1 run tomorrow. Anyway, for thanks to those of you who tuned in to watch, like, subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast. This will go up on our YouTube channel. Go ahead and subscribe to us. It's the Pesky Report. Follow us on Twitch at the Pesky Report as well. Let us know if you hate us, if you love us. You know, constructive criticism is always something we can work with. If you want to tell us that we should go to prison for our takes, go ahead. You know, whatever.
We'll keep doing the show in prison if you know, but.
I will find a way to keep recording from jail. Remember, I hit a photographer in the nuts in 2017, so I obviously would get special privilege in jail. But yeah, feel free to let us know. Follow us on Twitter at Pesky Report, Instagram, Facebook, etc. We're everywhere. Find a way to tell us we suck. Find a way to tell us we're great. Like I said, like, subscribe, comment, etc. Do all those things. This is the Pesky Report presented by Beyond the Monster. For Brian, I'm Jordan. We'll see you guys next time. Peace.